When you're looking at managing chronic conditions and you're looking at managing non-acute conditions, telehealth is a fantastic way in order for us to do outreach to patients and to schedule patients that otherwise might be turned to a more acute, higher acute center.
From InterSystems, it's the Healthy Data Podcast. I'm Jordan Cooper. To learn more about this and other episodes, please visit podcast.healthydata.com.
We're here today with Sue Bajaj of Yuvo Health. Sue is the CTO. Sue, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Jordan. I appreciate you having me on.
Sure. So,
conversation.
For our listeners, Yuvo is a health tech startup based in New York City, providing value-based contracting and administrative support to community health centers, including federally qualified health centers, which for the rest of this episode we'll be referring to as FQHCs. Sue, I'd like to kick off the conversation by discussing, the intersection. Yuvo is at the intersection of health equity and technology. I think many of our listeners are interested in health disparities, diversity, equity, and inclusion, and the topic of health equity more generally. Would you be able to give us an overview of what Yuvo is doing in this area of the healthcare sector?
Sure. Be happy to. So, Yuvo was founded a couple of years ago in 21, and more recently in 22, had contracted with some FQHCs in downstate New York. Our mantra, our goal at Yuvo Health is really to be inclusive. We're a BIPOC-founded organization. And in that, many of the founders, grew up using FQHCs. And so this really means a lot for folks to be able to enable FQHCs in the health equity space, but also just really enable FQHCs to take on value-based care. That's really what Yuvo does. A part of that, of course, is health equity and looking at what we can do from a technology standpoint to be able to enable FQHCs to do more with this Medicaid population. So largely, there's a more prevalent Medicaid population in FQHCs. And for our listeners, FQHCs can be essentially where there's not a lot of other available options for patients to go to a clinic, whether it's really rural, deeply urban, in different areas. And that's where FQHCs fill the void. There's about 1,400 of them nationally, so there's quite a large footprint. Yuvo is looking at this from the standpoint of, over the last few years, there's been many adopted technologies because of COVID. But even prior to COVID, some interesting stats that, Deloitte had done a survey back in 2018 showing that the Medicaid population was at about 86% adoption with smartphones. And I remember when I saw that back in 2018, 2019, and I thought, wow, that's really untapped potential in terms of, what we can do to enable the Medicaid population. And then COVID happened, right? And we were all focused on how do we do outreach to various populations through telemedicine, using smartphones, using tablets, and other modalities. And I think the way that Yuvo is looking at this from a product standpoint is how do we use the 86% population and grow that so that we can leverage other modalities of care along with the FQHC. So enable the FQHCs with telehealth, remote patient monitoring, some of these other capabilities. And that's really what we're looking to do. We're a startup, we just started all these things. We're kind of excited to get going on them, but that's the direction that we're headed in around this.
I'd like to take a step back here. So I asked about technology and intersection of health equity. We spoke a bit about the Medicaid population and where they potentially are. But I'd like to ask you to define areas of health disparities. What does health equity mean? What is not equitable? What are the hot topic issues within the context of health equity in America today?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a few. One would be, you know, access to care, access to seeing a clinician when it's needed, and, you know, being able to get to a clinician. So, for example, not having a car and having an urgent emergent situation. So it might be after hours and you're in a place where you can't go see a primary care doc, or there's not urgent cares. You know, I live in a suburb. There's an urgent care at every corner. That's not the case for a lot of our FQHC patients. And so they end up in the ED or the ER, which is not the right place for, you know, this kind of care. It really needs to be redirected to primary care. So that's an area of health inequity, right? Another area would be when you're looking at, you know, what are the drivers of high utilization? It's for a large part of the population in terms of health inequity. It's really things like consistent food, homelessness. You know, those drive quite a bit of the health inequity. You know, if I don't have a place to hang my hat, I'm certainly not worried about taking my medicines on time. I may not have a place for them. I may not be able to pick them up. Even though in Medicaid, you know, it's from the standpoint of you can go to a pharmacy and get it without payment. However, you know, if I have inconsistent housing, that ends up becoming a problem. So really the definition here is we have folks that don't have the same access that the rest of us do in terms of a home, food, access to care necessarily, to be able to manage. And so if they have chronic conditions, or even if they don't have chronic conditions and they just have other issues going on, it exacerbates the situation where, you know, they're not able to manage manage themselves and end up in the ER and ED, et cetera.
So when I think of health disparities, I heard you say basically food and homelessness I'd categorize under socioeconomic status, SES. Right. You said access, beneath which there was urgent care, transportation, timely access. That's all under the umbrella of access. Interestingly, I did not, and that all seems basically to seem to be financial indicators. But I did not hear you mention race or age, which are often considered to be areas where health disparities are measured. Care to comment?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's you know, something that absolutely you see the skew for, you know, other races, non-Caucasian races, that there is a greater disparity in access to care in some of these other items I've mentioned. So what ends up happening is an outcomes, really. So when you look at infant mortality, we all have heard that Black mothers have much higher infant mortality and much higher rate of something happening to them when they're delivering a child or postpartum, excuse me, than, you know, others. So absolutely age and race play, you know, a role in this as well. And I think FQHCs are very much there in the localities to help address those as well. And that's where I think, again, technology, you know, I come from a tech background. I'm the CTO here at UVO. I do think of tech in a lot of ways as a great equalizer in allowing us to do outreach and allowing us to do some things that create access, that create knowledge about what's going on with somebody that we otherwise wouldn't be able to know. It's not perfect. Of course, there's inherent biases, right, in technology because of who designs technology, right? By and large, technology is not driven and designed by women, by, you know, non-Caucasian folks. It's actually driven mostly predominantly by white males. And that does create bias in technology. UVO is looking at things, you know, differently again and wants to focus on how do we use technology, enable technology to with FQs, with patients, to sort of close the gaps in those access issues. Yeah.
Sue, let's dive a bit deeper right here. I'd like to ask what specifically is being done to reduce disparities and enhance equity using technology as a platform?
Yeah, I think one of the key things that's being done is, you know, driving patient care to telehealth and telemedicine. I think there was a great uptick. You know, about 17% of Medicaid patients during COVID were using telehealth and telemedicine in various ways. And there was, you know, greater utilization just because centers were closed, and or if they were open, limited hours, limited clinicians available, et cetera. So there was a greater drive towards that at the time. And then, of course, once, you know, we all opened our doors, full-fledged, everyone's sort of gone back to, even though they have smartphones, even though they have access, have gone back to wanting to see folks in person. There's a preference there. But I think, again, when you're looking at managing chronic conditions and you're looking at managing non-acute conditions, telehealth is a fantastic way in order for us to do outreach to patients and to schedule patients that otherwise might be turned to a more acute, higher acute center, right? That isn't necessarily going to solve their problems, because in the end, they do need to come back to their primary care doc. In the end, they do need to come back to their specialist. In the end, they do need to see somebody who's going to help manage their conditions. And the ED visit or the urgent care visit is more avoidable than we think by leveraging these technologies. And so that's an area that we're looking at, because we see that this keeps growing, and how do we partner with FQs to enable them to do telehealth and expand telehealth hours, along with, of course, you know, there's health plans in the mix here who offer some of this. And the third leg of the stool here is patient knowledge, right? So patients may not know, okay, I did this during COVID, but they may not realize that, hey, this is still a capability that I have. And rather than me, you know, walking down to the ER, I can actually just, you know, log into an app and see somebody for my flu or for me to manage my condition. And that's one way. Sorry,
it
go ahead.
It sounds like a lot of what you just discussed in terms of actions that can be concretely taken using tech to reduce disparities include providing lower acuity care in the form of telehealth or telemedicine in order to address chronic conditions and reduce readmissions, and therefore increase shared savings with value-based payment plans. Is that an accurate representation?
Yeah, you nailed it. Exactly.
Perfect.
That's one of the ways, yeah.
I heard you differentiate between telehealth and telemedicine. Would you mind elaborating for a moment on the difference between the two?
Yeah, I think folks do use that interchangeably, and I do as well use it. You know, it means different things to different folks, but I think that there's an aspect of the quick, I've got the flu, right? And I've done this. I've done this with my children, where, you know, they've got something and it's not very acute, but I would like them to see somebody. And it's after hours, and, you know, I don't want to take them to urgent care or to the ER because it's not necessary. And so you make a decision from, you know, a telehealth, you download a telehealth app, you pick one, right? And whatever's in network with your health plan, and you go for it, and it works great. Whereas, you know, the other telemedicine, this is more of a, and again, I do this as well with one of my clinicians who's in the city. I can't get to her very often. She's managing a condition with me, and I, every other visit, instead of going in, it's way more convenient for her and me. We talk 15 minutes, we have a chat, see how things are going. And that's another avenue, right, for really managing chronic conditions. And I think the differentiator in my mind may not be true for everybody, is this sort of low acute, I've got the flu, I've got, you know, some minor cold type of thing, but I do want to be seen and maybe get some help around it, and be triaged, because maybe that along with chronic conditions could be something, right, worse. But the other side of this is, if I'm trying to manage a chronic condition on a regular basis, and my practitioner does not have the bandwidth to, you know, have me come in, and vice versa, I don't have access to go in. I don't have a car, or I don't have access to go in. This enables the patient then to feel confident that, hey, once a month or once every 2 months, I'm going to have this call. And it's a face-to-face. I get to see my clinician. We get to talk about what's going on and how I'm managing my care.
Yeah. Would it be fair to say that telehealth is ad hoc and telemedicine is more regular?
Yeah, I would say that. I hope it's just not my definition, but I've heard it a few times.
We still have some ground to cover before the end of this episode and a few different issues I'd like to cover. One thing that occurred to me is I'd like to ask, in your opinion and your experience, what does diversity look like within the Medicaid population? Again, this is getting back to, you know, financial, race, age, and sex, but also, you know, I'm wondering with the recession and periodic unemployment, I'm wondering, you know, if maybe white collar professionals who find themselves out of work for 7 months end up in that time going from employer sponsored health insurance coverage down into uninsured and then Medicaid, and then go back into, you know, normal white collar professional jobs. And I'm wondering what the impact is on that, like cyclical or kind of one time temporary unemployment or professional, gaps in coverage, I'd say.
Yeah, and I think we saw some of that, right, with COVID, where COVID expanded Medicaid by about 10 million folks organically, where we didn't have redeterminations, and you've probably heard that there's going to be roll-offs of, you know, since the PBE is officially declared as over, and you are looking at, you know, losing this 10 million, and a lot of those folks are looking to health plans are being allowed to help them enroll, either re-enroll in Medicaid or help them enroll in ACA plans, which is kind of unheard of, right? This is a new thing. And I think that's great. And you make a great point, because there is a socioeconomic factor here, right? Is it skewed towards, certain sections of the population? Yes, absolutely. But there's a lot of folks that are, this ends up being a socioeconomic problem as well, just as it was in COVID, where there was layoffs and folks, you know, lost jobs, didn't have insurance coverage, and we, you know, accepted them into Medicaid with no redeterminations like we normally do, annual redeterminations. That's been going on for almost 3 years. So I think we've seen that. I think that it worked really well, but it definitely overwhelmed systems that were already overwhelmed. Add in COVID, which was overwhelming systems. Again, that's where I think having, you know, telehealth, telemedicine come into play, and other, you know, we haven't talked yet about some of these other technologies that we're looking at, but I think that can be a game changer for a lot of folks who are trying to manage conditions and have lost insurance and don't know what to do. And they are going to come into Medicaid to have the right income to come into Medicaid and or into subsidized ACA programs.
What are some of those other tech solutions that you just referenced?
Yeah, so some of these other ones that I think, you know, that I think we just started to see, especially you've heard a lot of these like digital health startups, right, that were managing weight or managing a variety of different things like autoimmune disease or other chronic conditions. But I think we just are at the tipping point, not even just starting maybe at the tipping point there, around these mHealth apps. That sort of give people a community, right? So now many of them need to be vetted, right, for us and who we partner with. But looking at, for example, telehealth or telemedicine for specialty care, where we have an opportunity for folks who need specialists, could they use some of these mHealth apps to improve medication adherence, manage chronic conditions, and, you know, again, be more preventative. Because they need specialists that maybe aren't readily available in the FQs, they're most definitely not. But they have to go outside. It's hard to get appointments, et cetera. And the other part of it is it gives them a community, right? I don't know if you've ever used any of these mHealth apps, but you know I have, and it gives you a community of folks who have similar chronic conditions, and gives you an opportunity to discuss, even talk about nutrition, talk about a variety of things to help you manage your conditions. So I think, again, the third leg of the stool is always education, and how do we get patients to adopt How do we incentivize them to use these? And then measure, right? So was this useful? Did this help us to really manage this patient? How did the patient work? How did the patient use this? Now, some of these mHealth apps, they're measuring things like clicks and interaction, which isn't the best. You know, I've used some of these, which isn't the best way to say, okay, somebody's sticking to something. It doesn't necessarily mean that. I think it ends up being kind of a false positive. We need to really look at outcomes for these apps and outcomes with these patients. But I think, again, that's a very underutilized ecosystem that has really been, at this point, more direct to consumer. It hasn't been brought into the Medicaid population at large. I'm not saying we're using it yet, but it's something that we're definitely considering as well.
So, Sue, I've been enjoying this conversation. However, we are approaching the end of this podcast episode. As such, I'd like to pose a final question to you and invite you to elaborate where you see it most, where you have the most interest. My question is, given that our audience is mostly large health system CIOs, how can large health systems best partner with FQHCs and serve this Medicaid or perhaps dual eligible, meaning Medicaid and Medicare population?
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, there's a few ways. I think there's this data that's really important for us to help manage these patients. So I think as, you know, they're admitted, and I think we see them being admitted or even pre-admission where there's a planned admission, right? There's some instances where there is a planned admission, especially with we have a large population of pregnant women. And I think in the Medicaid population, again, there's a real opportunity to partner with health systems with this population in, postpartum care, in the actual, birth and exchange of data between us and them, in that, hey, we have all this information about this patient that's walking through your door, right? And partnering with you so that you understand what their primary care has been working with them on, what are the conditions they may have, et cetera, and then even in postpartum. So in follow-up of postpartum care for us and with the health system where they may be coming back in to see their OB, et cetera. And I think there's a real opportunity, even if we start there with, women who are delivering kind of well in advance of delivery, so that we are giving the health system the opportunity to see our curated data, which we work on to say, okay, these are the conditions. These are some of the social determinants of health for this patient that we have readily available. So as they walk into the door and they're delivering at your system, you're more well-versed, your clinicians are more well-versed in what's actually happening. So I think data is the core of it, and there's a real opportunity to work together around it.
Well, I love ending on that note, Sue. I'd like to remind our listeners, this has been Sue Bajaj, the CTO of Yuvo, health tech startup in New York City. Sue, thank you very much for joining us today.
Okay, great. Thank you.
From InterSystems, this has been the Healthy Data Podcast. I'm Jordan Cooper. Thank you for listening.